Hello, and welcome to Fantasy Sister, the number 10 podcast. I'm Jimmy Adebe, and this is my show about football's number 10 and all things playmaking related, told through exclusive interviews, stories, and discussions. In this, the very first podcast, I bring you a number 10 origins investigation. Does Spain have an affinity with the number 10 shirt? Back in 2013, when Spain were at the peak of their powers, I investigated why, despite being able to call upon playmakers like Andres Iniesta, David Silva, Juan Mata, Isco and Thiago Alcantara, the country didn't have a history of producing superstars associated to the number 10 like their Latin counterparts have. To help me investigate, I spoke with well-respected Spanish football expert, journalist and broadcaster Graham Hunter, Spanish football historian Ángel Iturriaga, and the man who just so happens to be Lionel Messi's first-duty coach at Barcelona, Rodolfo Borrell, currently Pep Guardiola's assistant at Manchester City. I hope you enjoy. During the turn of the last decade, football's beautiful game had shifted and its dance had changed. A slick new beat had emerged from the land of the flamenco, deposing of the samba's long-established reign. The tiki-taka rhythm, employed by Barcelona and Spain, conquered hearts and tournaments on its way to becoming the new standard-bearer for El Yogo Bonito. At first glance, tiki-taka's core philosophy, which preaches team play over individuality, is seemingly at odds with the number 10, the protagonist to the beautiful game for so long. So, does this mean the land of tiki-taka now views the role of a specific playmaker obsolete? Did Spanish football, pre-tiki-taka, even have a tradition of developing and employing specialist number 10s? As Spain became blessed with a plethora of highly technical, diminutive playmakers, prior to its recent golden generation, the country arguably hadn't produced that standout superstar in the role associated with the iconic number, something that's in stark contrast when viewed alongside the other countries of Latin origin.
Brilliant from Messi. Oh, what a goal that is!
Brazil, Italy and Argentina can boast the likes of Zico, Baggio and Maradona, and their lists could go on and on. France, they have Platini and Zidane. Portugal, Rui Costa. Even Romania have produced Georgi Hagi. But Spain?
Can you name me a legendary or historic number 10 from Brazil?
Pelé.
Zico.
From Argentina?
Messi.
Maradona.
From Italy?
Totti.
Baggio.
From France?
Zidane.
Platini.
From Spain?
Surely there's somebody. At this point, it would be remiss of me not to mention Luisito Suarez Miramontes of Barcelona in Inter Milan fame. After all, the midfield schemer from the 50s and 60s won the Ballon d'Or in 1960, becoming the first and still only Spanish-born player to do so. However, as far as I'm aware, he had little to no association with the number 10 shirt, and whilst he started out as an inside forward, he became best known for his deep-lying schemer role at Inter Milan. Here's Graham Hunt and I back in 2013 discussing those very points on Suarez and how he's viewed in Spain.
Do you think he was regarded as a 10?
This is it. I mean, he seems to flow from the classic number 10 to more of a register role. But I think he's closest to a superstar, if you like, playmaker that the Spanish have produced prior to this current generation. I just wondered if they held him in such high esteem as other
he's
countries.
He's never regarded. I don't see him talked about here as a 10.
Right.
But I do see him talked about as a second striker. Yes, inventive, but quick and dangerous, creating, scoring. He's held in mythical regard. He's respected, but I think he's respected for slightly different things than having been a Diaz.
So, it seems even Suarez, arguably Spain's greatest playmaker of last century, the man they call the architect due to his elegance and creative playing style, didn't become synonymous with the 10 shirt, in spite of playing in an era when inside forwards automatically assumed the number more often than not, at least those positioned on the left-hand side of the pitch. And, despite playing in an age when the likes of Pelé, Puskas, Rivera and all became both celebrated and tied to the number. It was that type of international superstar, often viewed as the best players in their team and country, along with their association to the number 10 shirt, that had a cultural influence over the world game, helping inspire preceding generations to replicate. Therefore, usually a forward-thinking player, who had great technical skill and artistic flair with the ball, who could dribble expertly, produce moments of magic, create and score goals, became more and more connected to the number. This synopsis could be true for most footballing countries around the world, so why then, historically, didn't Spain fall in love with the number 10 like its Latin counterparts had? Which, if any, shirt numbers or playing positions did the Spanish take to their hearts? Was there something more fundamental in its footballing culture which made it difficult for the 10 to rise and thrive? Perhaps it was Furia Roja, the Red Fury, which contributed, in which spirit, work ethic, speed and intensity were the truly valued attributes. In that, the Spanish had more in common with the Brits, another footballing culture that historically doesn't revere the shirt number, possibly for the same reasons. Here's Graham Hunter again, who gave me his views on those topics.
In all honesty, I think culturally, and any statement like this to me has to be a generalisation, and somebody could pluck one example to contradict it. But generally, the footballing culture in Spain, I believe, hasn't been as obsessed with the essence of a number 10. That's what we're talking about, the trequartista, the fantasista, or the...
Yeah.
What we in Britain grew up calling the number 10 position. I don't think Spain, and I mean historically, has viewed that as with such religious fervour as, for example, let's just say Italy, for example. And again, with broad brush here, Jimmy, one of the ways I think you can explain this is that there's a reason that the Spanish national team was nicknamed La Furia Roja, which I guess, you know, just means kind of the red hustle and bustle, the red intensity, the red fury.
Yeah.
Red fury is a literal translation, but it's not a good translation. Okay. It effectively means that even if there were individual players of high skill playing for the Spain national team, it was still the case that they valued attitude and what they call here garra, intensity, work ethic, speed, spirit. And while Spain has got a history of wonderfully talented footballers, it's also the case that I think in the early part of, you know, the last century, well, in the, both the early and also the latter part of last century, Athletic Bilbao were very dominant, and you know that many, many clubs in Spain were founded by Brits, either entrepreneurs or traders, but principally engineers and construction people who'd come over to Spain and been hired to work in Spain, and there was a British attitude to football for a long part in the Spanish development. Now, technique, it's really contradictory. Technique has always been highly prized in Spain, even well before this modern age. But that single position of a creative player, I think in Spanish mythology has been dwarfed by figures like the great number nine, the great goal scorer, a great goalkeeper. There's a high proportion of mythical goalkeepers in this country. Okay. I would also say that there's been a high proportion of captains, leader figures, centre halves,
right,
centre midfielders, who, in the terms you're talking about, philosophically, what occupies the heart, the spirit of Spanish football, many of these would come higher up the rank than saying a great number 10. That aside, some of the exceptions which prove the rule in modern times, to my eyes, have been utterly fantastic. For example, what was Cruyff?
Yeah.
I've always worried about, you know, can you classify him as a striker or a midfielder? I'm not sure. Where do we classify Maradona? I'm not sure. Rivaldo possibly was a 10, or was he? I don't know. And you look at great foreign figures like that, you begin to see that there's an appetite in Spain, because we're going back to 1973, if you talk about the signing, correct, there's an appetite in Spain in Spanish football for players of that vision and quality. And if we remain talking in very broad brushes, that I think you can begin to say that Spain doesn't have the same reverence for the out-and-out number 10 figure throughout its history as other countries do.
So we begin to understand that philosophically and culturally, the Red Fury indeed played a role in Spain's detachment from the 10. Extrapolating this premise further, it becomes entirely logical, as Graham alluded, that the players who mostly captured the nation's hearts were the great captains of this mould who played in central defence or midfield, the great goal scorers and the great goalkeepers. Do you have a favourite number 10 you'd like the podcast to be the subject of? Well, perhaps you've got more to add from this particular episode. Let me know on Twitter at Fantasista10. That's at Fantasista10. You can find more on Instagram at the same place. Even more on the website, Fantasista10.co.uk. That's Fantasista10. And on Facebook and YouTube at the same handle. Other factors also contributed to Spain's seeming indifference to the number 10. Prior to the 1980s, Spanish teams traditionally played with classic interiores, who, in line with other inside forwards around the game during those earlier decades, generally wore numbers 8 and 10. As both had the same role, and as we heard when discussing Luis Suarez, the number 10 wasn't seen as particularly special or unique and didn't develop into a central figure. There have of course been exceptions in La Liga, but those fated playmakers were often imported. During the 1970s, a deluge of foreign players, signed by clubs attempting to fill the gaps in positions the nation wasn't producing, led to regulations being introduced and players banned unless they were of Spanish origin. However, this led to what became known as the Oriundo scandal, when it was discovered that a huge percentage of the player imports from Latin America, and in particular Argentina, managed to circumnavigate the no foreigner rule by basically inventing Spanish parentage. Research gathered by a Barcelona lawyer in the 70s showed that around 3/4 of those players were in the country on false papers. Despite the scandal, did this influx of players from South American football cultures have an impact on the Spanish perspective of the number 10? Furthermore, whilst importing playmakers suggests there was an appetite in Spain for players of vision and high technical quality, as Graham mentioned in part 1, conversely it showed that the country wasn't consistently producing their very own top-notch playmaker, fantasist. Actually, what are the Spanish terms for what we simply call the number 10?
Media punta.
Is that?
Media punta. Media punta.
Media punta.
Enganche is not useful in in Argentina.
Argentina.
Enganche has nothing to do with Spain. It's definitely is Argentinian, because I had the good luck to be the first coach of Lionel Messi, and the first thing I had is a piece of newspaper, a photocopied piece of newspaper from Argentina, when the player was coming on trial. Unfortunately, I just was the coach under 14 at this moment in time, season 2000-2001. And the newspaper was talking about his position, Enganche.
Right.
And for me, it was the first time
I heard.
Right. All right, back in 2000-2001.
Yeah.
Then he's not familiar in Spain. You would say media punta, or you would say the 10.
Number
10. Play number 10.
Yeah, okay.
That was Spanish coach Rodolfo Borrell. We'll be hearing a lot more from him in just a second, but so far we've gained a little bit of context from Spain's football culture, history, and now naming customs. So what else is there? Well, Rodolfo Borrell also illuminated the socio-economic circumstances which may have impacted, and still may impact, why certain types of players do not develop. Borrell was a Barcelona youth team coach for 14 seasons and part of the famed La Masia Academy, overseeing starlets such as Cesc Fabregas and, as we've heard, Lionel Messi amongst others during his time there.
When he came in Barcelona, in all the youth system, we were playing 3-4-3 diamond in the middle.
Right.
We were playing like this.
It's the year 2013 and I'm sitting in Borrell's first floor office at Liverpool Football Club's Kirby Academy. The same magnificent site, which will soon replace Melwood as the first team's training base.
When Barcelona swapped and went to
the view from his office is fantastic, overlooking a perfectly manicured football pitch, created to the exact same dimensions as Anfield's hallowed turf. During this time, Borrell was LFC's head of academy coaching, and he's in the middle of giving me a fascinating interview, detailing many positions set up on his magnetic tactics board, demonstrating how and why certain systems containing certain players can or cannot incorporate a number 10.
One, no working.
No.
Because you've got this.
Yeah.
With three, it's a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
Because if one is not working at all.
He's also going to recount some of his personal stories and views involving the likes of Lionel Messi, a player who was at least on a par with Messi at youth level, Ronaldinho, and Thiago Alcantara. But for now, I've just asked whether he thought great number 10s are mostly being imported to La Liga and not developed because clubs have put more of an emphasis on specific team play at youth level coaching rather than developing an individual's talent for a specific role. He tells me...
No, I just would say that sometimes we need to understand the football from the social point of view too. What this mean? What I mean with that? I mean that still in some societies, in some countries, the players are still playing on the streets. It's like in some cultures, in some countries, still playing on the beaches, on the streets, in the parks, etc., etc. Each time is more dangerous. It's more dangerous to live. And one time we did we study about the players that we have in the youth system. Not the ones coming from another areas or another countries, if not players from the province of Barcelona.
Okay.
And suddenly we realized that from the city center we had one. And this is another explanation in the way that in the area where everything are streets and cars and you cannot play on the street and take care because of the security and money and stay more at home and the computer and the PlayStation, etc., etc.,
yeah,
less time to play football. Also, the societies that have more economical level, a lot more things to play at home, all right? And this means that if you've got the PlayStation plus many other things, possibly you are in the sofa spending more time, but if you haven't got any money and you don't have anything, it's very easy to have a ball to share in between 20 neighbors, right? And this is a sport that you develop better if you practice as many hours as any other thing, as playing an instrument or doing any other activity, right? What this mean? This mean that all this profile of player usually is a player that is streetwise, is a fighter, at the same time is skillful, is a player with character, with personality, and all of this, all right, is more easy to produce in an environment where you can play still on the beach, on the street,
more
because
freely.
Because first you are playing in different surfaces, all right? Then where dominate the ball is not that easy. Second, because when you play with the neighbors or with the friends, suddenly you might be 12 years old and you are playing against 21, 18, 17, etc., etc. Third, possibly the ball is not the best ball in the world, and you are adapting also to that. Possibly the shoes are also not the best,
right.
All right? And all of this makes a player tough, yeah? And not only tough, if not that the player that grow in this environment, not everyone, but usually in these environments grow more this profile of play.
Okay.
Then I would not say it's because of the development or the type of development or the type of training sessions. If not that these things helps. And in this, with all my heart, you can start from Diego Armando Maradona till Johan Cruyff, even coming from Holland but many years ago, Pelé, Lionel Messi, etc., etc.
Let's get back to the tactical views and how the 4-3-3 system affected those whose natural game would have been that of a number 10, and also the profile of certain players who many casual observers may deem to be similar. Real coach Cesc Fabregas, while Barcelona already had Xavi and Iniesta, all three can playmake, but does that make them playmakers in terms of being a number 10?
I think Iniesta would fit better the profile of 10 than Cesc Fabregas.
Right. Cesc more of a...
Yeah, I think Cesc has got more defensive capacities than Iniesta,
right.
So to play deeper.
Okay.
And Iniesta more profile to play more forward.
Okay.
This doesn't mean they cannot play.
Yeah.
They can play perfectly. But for example, in the 3-4-3 diamond, Cesc was the bottom one. All of them, I know that the people look at them pretty similar, but I think they are very different. I think all of them have great characteristics, all of them can play in the middle of the park.
Yeah.
But I think all them three are very, very different.
Well, to the classic playmaker role, Iniesta is more suited, do you think?
Yeah, I think Iniesta is of them three.
Yeah.
It's more clear the profile of number 10.
Yeah.
The other two, I think Cesc is to play deeper.
Mm.
And I think Xavi personally is a player that this shape 4-3-3 has been like a perfect shape for him.
Right.
Because I think he gives him the opportunity to play in the right position, and the rest of the team is in a position ideal for him to produce for them. Xavi in a 4-2-3-1, I don't think he's a defensive midfielder, and I don't think he's a number 10 to occupy the full width of the pitch. This 4-3-3 shape suits him perfectly. For his physical characteristics, especially, because obviously from his technical abilities, is from the technical point of view, is exquisite. It's perfect. The view of the game, the pass, this body shape, this first touch, perfect. He never loses the ball. It's fantastic.
Always.
When he came in Barcelona, in all the youth system, we were playing 3-4-3 diamond in the middle. But the problem is this, that when it's 4-4-2 diamond, no problem.
Yeah.
When it's 3-4-3, no problem. When this, because still are four.
Yeah.
When this become 4-3-3,
it's
very difficult you remain with one.
Three, yeah.
Right, that's why here the profile should be another one, and usually these players have ended playing here.
Okay.
When you play 4-2-3-1, and the great example was Zinedine Zidane, but in order this one to have freedom like Zinedine Zidane, that is also a very clear number 10 profile, you will not remember, but you know who were there. Deschamps. And Petit, or Vieira. Then it's like four mountains for one
to go off.
Usually, if they are red footed here to put inside, and if they are red footed here.
Okay.
Why? To let them go inside and still develop his ability to play in between.
Yeah.
Because usually these players are not players to play in the outside and cross.
Mm.
When the 3-4-3 became 4-3-3,
yes,
ended playing on the wing. And it's when Lionel Messi went to play on the wing with the left, yeah, putting inside. He was some years playing in this situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Not only him. I don't know if you know Giovanni Dos Santos.
Yeah.
I had also Giovanni Dos Santos. Right. Giovanni Dos Santos is this position. But he ended when was the change playing here.
Okay.
Right. Was another player called Iago Falque, exactly the same. He was a number 10, but when this became 4-3-3, it's difficult because this player need to work. Then these players, most of them, ended playing on the wing with the freedom to cut inside.
Right.
Suso is exactly exactly the same scenario.
Okay.
And with this, I'm not comparing him at all with Lionel Messi or the other one. But it is exactly the same scenario than Coutinho's and Messi's and Giovanni Dos Santos and Iago Falque's.
Okay.
That with the situation in the midfield, they end playing on the wing, cutting inside. But obviously his characteristics are very clear as a number 10. To be fair with you, the first one who put him on the wing was myself.
Right.
When I had him in the second team.
A great insight from a man who for many years helped develop the tiki-taka philosophy with the best of them. The blueprint of which is seen as largely responsible for the technical emphasis Spain also switched to at youth level. Years later, the Fiore Roja is no more. Conscious effort was also made to strip out the Fiore. Here's Graeme Hunter again, back in 2013.
Culturally and conceptually, it's important to understand that there's been an idea at national level that they want to now only refer to the national team as La Roja.
Yeah.
There's been a conscious, it's like Labour, New Labour.
Right.
There's been a conscious effort to try and strip out the Furia, because there has been, for many years, an emphasis on technique. Certainly over the time I've been in Spain, there has been a push to get rid of the Furia as a concept, because at youth level, at the clubs, certainly at youth level for Spain, and patently at youth level in places like Barcelona, principally, not only, but principally Barcelona, there's been a heavy, heavy, heavy emphasis on technique.
Okay.
So the Federation and the coaches and some journalists have been trying to eliminate the word Furia. And maybe that tells you that there's a recognition that you don't consistently produce players of such gifts, Iniesta and so on, if the emphasis is all on Furia rather than technique and imagination.
Enjoying the podcast? If so, please subscribe and rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your other podcast provider. Thank you. With the luxury of time, we can now see how Spain's La Roja benefited from dropping the Fiore and were rewarded. They seemingly managed to create a modern-day number 10 cloning facility, such as being the regularity which they produce playmakers of a similar ilk. Andres Iniesta, David Silva, Santi Cazorla, Juan Mata, Isco. As Graeme said, would this diminutive lot have been produced if the emphasis was still on Fioria? So what exactly influenced Spain's commitment to change, and when did it occur? What or who was the catalyst for such a change in the culture that had been ingrained for the best part of a century? Graeme Hunter is convinced the answer is not solely about Roja, but also Arangi.
I'm absolutely 100% sure that our absolute 100% base reason is Cruyff. His impact originally when he came into Franco was Spain in 73, when Spain was closeted, unsure of its place in the world. And a guy comes along who plays as he did and talked as he did and showed technique as he did at a time when the world was gushing over total football. I'm not saying he was greater, for example, than Kubala, or greater than Gento, or greater than Stefano, or whatever it might be. But at that particular time, I think Spain were aware that the rest of the world had moved on and they hadn't, and that was a thirst, there was an appetite for what was new. And it just so happened this was the guy that came along. By the time he left, I think he was back within 11 years or something like that. And he created that dream team. That dream team branded Spanish football. It branded an era. Before they won the European Cup, they won the Cup Winners' Cup, but played with a verve and a brand of football, a again at a time when Spain was rediscovering itself with the Olympics, and that branded the national consciousness. And many of the players you're talking about now either were just becoming conscious of football then, or if they were born subsequently to it, their father, their teacher, their big brother was imbued with that spirit, that ideology, the concept of how you should train, what skills you should emphasise. You're talking about this Spanish Federation saying, we want our teams to play like that Barcelona team played.
The earlier mentioned batch of diminutive playmakers developed in this environment and fit perfectly within the tiki-taka philosophy. Each can be held up as an example of a modern-day playmaker, with perhaps Iniesta and David Silva most closely resembling a classic number 10. But that's not to say Spain hasn't produced playmakers independently of the tiki-taka philosophy, even during the period it flourished in. Perhaps one of the earliest to thrive, although still cast in the Barcelona mould, was the impish Ivan de la Peña, who eventually crossed the city divide and was excellent for Espanyol. During 2013, I discussed more of the standout names Spain had produced with Graham, including the gifted but never fully trusted Guti at Real Madrid, the rare and initially outstanding Julen Guerrero at Athletic Bilbao, and the wonderfully slow-motioned Juan Carlos Valerón, who Graham affectionately labelled as
Spain Zidane, where he played, what his physical size, his technique and balance compared to his physical size, his importance to their team. I went and watched him when they were in the second as well, and you know, to be able to handle a league where people run around a lot and kick you wasn't bad. You know, I thought he was an extraordinary footballer. I'm very, very fond of him.
Did you ever see much of Julen Guerrero, Athletic?
Yeah, I mean, clearly there's another player of the same ilk.
Yeah.
I thought that he was so rare when he came through, and he was exceptionally gifted. Okay. And Athletic Bilbao over the years have been the epitome of the clubs who play with power and force and aggression. Not all the time, but there's an identifiably old-fashioned British style about them throughout their history.
Yeah.
And I think that his gifts, you know, were evident. He was of the style that you were talking about, yeah. Guti would obviously count as another. And I stress again, there, once you start, if you want to start listing, there are many. But Guti, if you begin to see the degree to which he was or wasn't trusted by various coaches across various eras, you know, he was sublimely gifted. But
yeah.
Not necessarily trusted. Guti of my era had, you know, I suspect that a 10, traditionally, in my view, is helped by the formation that a club plays in. You know, I would have said that my most classical definition of a 10 is that he might be behind two strikers. It patently doesn't have to be like that, because the type of player we're talking about, could occupy the space between a four-man midfield and a single striker, I'm sure. But my ideal, as I was growing up, was always that maybe the two strikers were occupying the two centre-halves, and that would leave a gap whereby the midfield didn't know whether to come back, or maybe they did, but often the 10 would find space and would be a fulcrum, would be a linchpin, would be a which, if the ball was played, you'd see something visionary in his movement or his touch, distribution, how we went past a player, perhaps. And I would have said Guti had all that wherever he played. But I think he was also asked sometimes to play slightly deeper than that. But in terms of, you know, his thinking, his ideals, his distribution, his vision, his inventiveness, he would definitely stand as my example of it.
Oh, Guti,
¡qué partido de Guti! ¡Qué partido de Guti que levanta el encuentro con dos acciones espectaculares!
Isco's got a lot of what we've been talking about without being right now a number 10. But Silva doesn't play as a number 10 generally, for Spain anyway. More for Manchester City, I accept.
Yes.
But for Spain, he's used wide a lot because of the formation. But to me, Silva is a classic number 10 in everything, positionally, movement, whatever. Now, I think Isco's got that too, but I've got no doubt at all. You could stick him behind two strikers, behind one striker. You could play him in the middle of the pitch because his vision, his dominance, his touch, his his ability to arrive on the edge of the box and score from distance, all of these things are there. I think there was a case to be made for Canales. As an out-and-out 10, don't know, but very close to it. And the injuries he suffered have been brutal, so...
Do you think he suffered because of his move to Madrid too early?
You know, they hurried that move through. Very nearly, he was on the verge of signing for Manchester United. Real Madrid, you know, were lucky in that the dad, Canales' dad, was had real sympathies for Real Madrid as a fan. But a player can get over a bad year at a club much quicker than he can get over his knee collapsing twice in 10 months. Do you know what I mean?
One matter then?
I said, and I'm not being wise after the event, I was asked on TalkSport a lot when he was about to sign for Chelsea, and I said, listen, number one, he can play as a 10. He's a central striker. Never mind where he plays for Valencia. There's loads of goals in this guy. I knew him a little bit from talking to him. Again, he's got a very British attitude.
Right.
Tough as they come. He's intelligent. I knew, I absolutely knew how he would do at Chelsea. And I'm convinced that, well, again, he is not your classical 10.
Yeah.
He can play in that 10 position because he's so gifted, so intelligent, so fit, so quick. Where I would, and these are niceties, I don't think these are to argue about much, but from my vision, he would be what I would call classically a second striker, not the first point at which the ball is delivered to. Very clever at taking knockdowns, very quick at making space around a central striker, whether the central striker is leaving room for Matt at the score or vice versa, whichever it is. I've got the highest regard for him as a footballer and as a person.
And as the discussion returned to Valeron, Graham paid him a fitting tribute, one which could be held true for all great playmakers.
What I would say is that you see the intelligence, your appetite for winning, not just showing off. As soon as you start talking about these three quartistas, you often philosophically get into an idea about whether they're on the pitch to look pretty or to be effective by doing things that are lovely. And I think those are two different things. And Valeron always, to me, was always applied to winning and the betterment of the team.
And who were Rodolfo Borrell's choices?
They have been players that have been very important for their clubs in some long periods of time, especially Valeron. Also, for example, David Silva is a great playmaker.
Yeah.
Julen Guerrero, he had his a long period of time in Athletic Bilbao,
yeah,
when especially in his first years he was a decisive player for his team.
I then ask specifically about his coaching career. Who's the best player Borrell had ever coached at youth level? Before you think, like me at the time, that'll be a straightforward answer. Surely it's Lionel Messi. Borrell threw a curveball. Listen to this.
Victor Vázquez is the best player I've had in my career.
Really?
I signed him from a small club to Barcelona. And I had him 2 seasons.
He was on a par with Messi. Better.
It was unbelievable. The only one is that.
Borrell has shown me a famous picture on his desk.
Oh, yeah.
Me?
Messi.
I have the photos at home.
He's now proudly showing me more photos of the youth teams which he coached. They contain some very recognisable faces.
Victor Vázquez.
Nice.
Messi.
Yeah.
Seriously. Fabregas.
Piqué.
But this is the brother of Riera that was here.
Okay.
Now he's in Cyprus or.
Yeah.
He's in La Liga in Valladolid. Went to Sevilla. Now he's in Valladolid in La Liga. Marc Valiente. Tony Calvo, he was also in Greece, Cyprus, first division.
Yeah.
This is the 1987 promotion.
Is it?
And I had them in 98-99. And 2 years later, I got promoted and I had them in 2000-2001. That is when Messi came.
Okay.
This is 2000-2001.
Well, Victor Vázquez was...
I always have said is the player with more talent ahead.
Yeah.
Very good lad.
Yeah.
Very good lad. Very good person. Unbelievable player.
Yeah.
Unbelievable player. And in the team was another one.
Mm.
Rafael Blázquez, that was a midfielder.
Okay.
Also is another player that if you talk to any of them and you would ask, they still cannot understand how he hasn't made that unbelievable. Right foot, left foot, good range of pass, short, medium, long, good view of the game, quick, strong, good heading, finishing.
He's
in the opposite side of the photo.
Right.
The other end. I had a bet with my boss at this moment on time, because he always was saying, you have this under 12s. If one of them gets into the under 18, this will be a lot. Don't be so proud. I said, I'm going to make a photo. All the lads, I think, will play La Liga.
Yeah, yeah. Top level.
And when they will do it, I will come and I will show you. It's Victor Vázquez.
Yeah.
He's in Bruges. This made the debut in Espanol, but now he's in Championship in Spain. This is Piqué.
Yeah.
This is Valiente in Valladolid, La Liga, and Cesc Fàbregas. Messi is not here because Messi came two years later and came in the middle of the season. But 2 years later, in the beginning of the season, the same photo in the same place, the same players. Here, and 2 years older, in the same position. And then, like 4 months later, came Messi.
Madre del amor hermoso. La que acaba.
Ovación de Pep Guardiola, ¿eh?
Thiago espectacular, como
decía. To be fair, I only had Thiago one game. Because Thiago was going through the youth system, and he got at one stage that obviously he was very good, and he was stepping quite quick. At this moment in time, I was under 17 coach, and he went straight from the 16s to the 18s.
Right.
He didn't go to the 17s where I was as a coach.
Okay.
All right. But while he was under 16, he played one game for the under 16. Because Thiago is a fantastic technician.
¡Qué control!
Fantastic view of the game. Very risky sometimes in the type of pass that he does. All right. Okay. Having said that, he's the best dribbling midfielder I've seen.
Thiago, uy, Thiago eléctrico como siempre, le tira abajo la patada.
Oh, qué bueno.
Because Cesc Fàbregas, Xavi, they beat you opponents by the body shape and the first touch, but not by the dribbling. Right? Thiago is capable to face anybody and just dribble him like nothing.
Impressive.
And these are the small difference that for me make big difference in between these players, as I told you.
Okay.
When I said to you that for me, Iniesta, Xavi and Cesc, everyone look at them like very similar, and for me they are very different in these small details.
Es muy bueno, Thiago es pura magia. Es de los tipos típicos jugadores que pueden.
He's the finest playmaker you've seen, or number 10 you've seen. You must have seen Ronaldinho. His peak and
Ronaldinho, I have to say that he was exceptional when he came in Barcelona, and also his first, especially 2 or 3 years.
Oh, Ronaldinho at his very best.
I always said that. I think Ronaldinho was the key to bring Barcelona back to where it is now.
Right.
Especially initially the first 2 years, I think he was the one who was the key on everything. And Ronaldinho, another exceptional player was Mikhail Laudrup.
Acaba de marcar Laudrup. Rematada espectacular de Laudrup. Después de un milimétrico perfecto medido. Y soltó con la pierna derecha Michael Laudrup. Qué golazo.
It's been many. Zinedine Zidane.
¡Gol! De Harry Potter. Zidane.
It's many players, and now to start mentioning some of them, for sure we would be missing some.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, but possibly the Brazilians and the Argentinians have been the ones who has produced more this type of play.
But we come back to the country's relationship today between the player type and the actual number 10. There's definite recognition that the number carries meaning. even to the extent of it being used against Rafael Benitez by his own players while he was coaching Real Madrid. That dressing room allegedly referred to him sarcastically as El Diez, the number 10, because he was trying to coach them, a squad of superstars, on ball technique and how to pass and shoot, despite the fact that he'd never played the game at the highest level. Spain's rise to the top of the football pyramid, where they remained between 2008 and 2014, was helped in no small part by the numerous playmakers they produced. Though, the fact that its dominance occurred in football's modern times meant that actual shirt numbers weren't as significant as perhaps they once were because of squad numbering at club level. Long gone are the days when a team lines up 1-11. This, in turn, has impacted international shirt numbers and once again seems to have hamstrung the Spanish relationship with the 10. Of all Spain's recent playmakers, none are still fully associated with the number, although Thiago Alcantara has been trying to buck that trend more recently. Cesc Fabregas wore the shirt number for all of Spain's major tournament wins, but as Rodolfo Borrell alluded to, and I'm sure most would agree, Fabregas is not a number 10 in the terms we're talking about. Those others who have seen more natural fits have rarely, if ever, donned the number. David Silva and Isco have tended to stick with 21 and 22 respectively, their club squad numbers, whilst Iniesta wore 6 for Spain, but is mostly associated with the number 8, his club number. This brings us neatly back to the days of Luis Suarez in the 1950s and 60s, of classic Interiores, who generally wore numbers 8 and 10. Both numbers had the same role, so neither was particularly special. Now footballers have an even greater collection of shirt numbers to choose from. Has this point changed? Compared with their Latin counterparts, Spain have a different relationship with the game's most revered number and its cult. However, after generations were inspired and a conscious effort was made to ensure technique was valued above all else, the result has been 2 European Championships and a World Cup victory, with their own brand of magical miniature playmakers at the fulcrum of the country's success. They just weren't necessarily wearing number 10. Fantasista 10 would like to give special thanks to Graham Hunter, Angel Etiriaga and Rodolfo Borrell for kindly sharing their time and incredible insights, and Liverpool Football Club back in 2013 for their access to Borrell. Please subscribe and rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your other podcast provider. Thank you.